This is Sean with Voices of St. Joan of Arc. And, sir, what is your name?
My name is William Sell, S-E-L-M.
And what's your wife's name?
Laura, L-A-U-R-A.
All right. So how did you guys originally get connected with St. Joan of Arc?
We moved to Indianapolis in 1983. And we bought our first house, and so I was kind of parish-less. I would go to different masses at different parish. I didn't join a parish at first. So when we bought our house, our first house, which was at 4025 Ruckel Street, which is just a block south of St. Joan of Arc, that's Ruckel Street, we bought the house. We moved in on the Saturday before Palm Sunday of 1985. And the next day, after we got moved in, the next day was Palm Sunday, and that was the first time I went to the church ever. So we were within the parish. We were could hear the bells. And by the way, where we live now is just one block over to the west, and I could still hear the bells. I could see the bell tower, the campanile, when in the wintertime. So that's how we came into the parish.
Okay. And over the years, what type of involvement have you and your wife been in different groups or committees?
Well, I guess I consider my most important role is I am the Corpus Christi procession marshal. So I coordinate the procession. And the procession was revived when Father Roberts came. So I'd say going on 10 years. And so that's one of my activities. Another one is I assist with RCIA. And of course, that's you'll have to ask someone exactly what RCIA is. It's for adults who are interested in coming into the church.
Sure.
So, as a matter of fact, I'm assisting with that tonight. So, I've been doing that, and then the other one is for when we did the restoration. I was on a restoration committee. So that was 2 years ago. And then I always, for French Market, our family's involved with French Market. So, and then I developed a tour of St. Joan of Arc, which I give during French Market. So I think I give three of those, throughout the day. And, sometimes I have 50, 60 people, and sometimes I have two people on the tour.
Wow.
That's something I developed because the Greek church, which used to be in the neighborhood, that's Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, they had a very famous Greek festival, and I would go there really for the tour, because the tour was sometimes delivered by the pastor of that parish, and it was just so excellent, and so that inspired me to explain what is St. Joan of Arc through its architecture and artwork, and its meaning. So that inspired me. So I developed an hour tour.
That's great. What are some maybe just kind of specific favorite moments that you've had with your family with the church?
Well, the first one is the first time I ever walked into the building. So that was Palm Sunday of 1985. So I walked into the church, and I was just astounded. I was dumbfounded. I was amazed, because I had previously, the year before, there was this controversy of gutting the cathedral, Saints Peter and Paul, and I was involved with that as an opponent, and so I had no idea that this gem, this true jewel of St. Joan of Arc, which, and I always say, the exterior of the church, or the interior, fulfills the promise of what you see on the outside. when you when I went into the church, it was all there. It was had not been butchered up like many churches had been, like the cathedral, like St. Mary's in Rushville, and other parishes. But when I got in there, I was just wow. And then I thought, this is my home. I really feel at home there. And so that was the number. That was my first encounter, and it was awesome. And then of course we have four children. Three of my four were baptized there, and then all four received their first Holy Communion. And then two have been married there. So St. Joan of Arc is really part of our family. And when I first came in the parish, there was nothing during Lent, which confused me, befuddled me, because, you know, Fridays in Lent, to me, in my growing up, and then in college and so on, you know, with Stations of the Cross and maybe benediction and all that. And so our parish, different pastors had just abandoned that. So I was also on the liturgy committee early on. And I said, well, can I do it? And basically there was a shrug saying, yeah, if you want to. And I said, yeah, I want to. So I revived Stations of the Cross on Fridays. And then what was wonderful, so that was Stations of the Cross and Rosary. And, you know, I would have maybe two dozen at the most people for that. But, you know, even if I had one person, I was satisfied with one person showing up. So I did that, and then, of course, I pressed into service my children as they got older to be the servers. So they would be the candle bearers and the crucifer, you know, carrying the cross from station to station. So, and then when Father Roberts came, he called me and said, oh, well, I'm doing things differently with Stations of the Cross. And so there's this pregnant pause. And I go, oh. He said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do, we'll have Stations of the Cross, we'll have Rosary and Mass. And I thought, wow, this is fantastic. And I said, why don't you throw in on the deal benediction? And he said, that's a good idea. So we have a with Father Roberts, we have a 2-hour Lenten service. And I always tell people, you know, maybe you don't have 2 hours, maybe you've got half an hour, so pick the one you want, Rosary, Mass, Stations, or Benediction. They're all about 30-minute increments. And it's just awesome. It's just, I call it the Catholic trifecta plus one. So, you know, he started Benedict, and I said, oh, and I know where the stuff is. For instance, the cope, which is the vestment worn in that. I said, I know where it is. So, you know, we got it out, he had it repaired and cleaned, and these men, you know, then we're off to the races with it. So that was really a wonderful moment, is to be called by the pastor. He said, oh, and by the way, I want you to lead the rosary. So it was an honor. And but the thing is he was, we're on the same level. We're on the same page.
Right.
And he wanted to do that. And I said, well, you know, how about benediction? He said, okay, throw it in. So that was a great moment. It really was. And let's see, I made a little list here. So the other thing is reviving Corpus Christi. The procession, which was so important in my childhood, because I'm from a German area of southeastern Indiana, and the procession was big. We go to my mother's village of Oldenburg, and the procession, you know, the route was over a mile long, and it would be hundreds of people, and it was just like in Germany. The Corpus Christi traditions. And so I was happy to have that. And another one. When we moved in Palm Sunday weekend, went to Mass, And then on Good Friday, I was there for the Good Friday service, and there was a storm. And then what accompanied the storm was drip, drip, drip. And it was very loud because, you know, Good Friday service is pretty quiet, and that drips of water coming through the roof, hitting the floor, you know, was very loud. So actually it was, I think it was that Easter Sunday, Father Schmidlin then announced he had a roof tile with him. So part of the sermon was the announcement that we've got to fix the roof. I think it was that Easter Sunday. And if not, actually that day, it was soon after. But at Good Friday, drip, drip, drip. And then we got that roof fixed.
That's good.
And let's see. And then the other issue is some years ago, I'd say 12, 15 years ago, there was a proposal by some people in the parish supported by the previous pastor, and that's to do unnecessary remodeling. Not restoration, this was remodeling. And so that got my hackles up because I was a veteran, a scarred veteran of the cathedral business. And I think other people, I spoke out against it. I said this is a waste of time, effort, and goodwill. And so they had enough money to do exterior work, and then people obviously didn't buy into it. And then we waited until Father Roberts came and then oversaw really a beautiful restoration, which was very, very satisfying. And part of the restoration was, there was scaffolding in the church all the way up to the ceiling, which is 60 feet high or thereabouts, which is the same height as the Sistine Chapel, by the way. And so one of the things I got to do was to climb the scaffolding stairs up, 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 up. And then I was able to touch the ceiling, you know, with my hand. I just hold my hand up and I can touch it. And in the very center. And that was a great thrill. And then to see the paintings details and the architectural details up close. I'm an architectural historian. I teach architectural history, so this stuff is important to me.
Right.
So anyway, that was another great thrill.
So who would be a couple people, you know, let's say besides Father Guy Roberts that you've seen, you know, do a lot for the church and you'd like to give a little appreciation to?
Well, another one is Mr. Carl Henn, who's just recently deceased. And I just sent out an email to my children. I said, he's the very model of a devout Catholic man. And it reminds me of my grandfather. And so he was just a few months short of 100 years old.
Right.
His birthday would have been in September. And so he really embodied old St. Joan of Arc, you know, and I don't know when he joined the parish. I know he was in the Second World War. I don't know if they joined right after the moving or coming to the parish. But another one was my next door neighbor, Jim Brady. And Mr. Brady was an usher, and he also counted the money, the offerings on Sunday. And he was born in the parish. And he was baptized in the old church, the original church, which stood on the north playground of the school. So Mr. Brady, I would often talk to him about St. Joan of Arc over time. And one of the things he told me is that the church was decorated with the paintings after, like, about 1950. So it was after the war. And he said, the pastor really didn't tell anybody. He just went ahead and did it. So next thing they knew is there was scaffolding all over the interior and the painters were there. I thought that was sort of funny that this big operation was, it just happened with really nobody involved in it except the pastor. But that's kind of how things used to be done with, you know, because the pastor was the CEO. And he called the shots, and you know, for good or for bad, that's how it was.
Okay.
So, Mr. Brady, so he's an old timer, and now deceased. His daughter still lives in the house. And as I said, he was baptized in the original parish church, which was built immediately as soon as the parish was founded in 1921. And they tore that down, I think, in 2000 or 1999 to make way for the expanding the school.
Right. All right. Well, I really appreciate all the history and whatnot. I know the parish will as well. But if you could just stay on the line, would you like to say anything else kind of in closing?
Yeah, it's 100 years. And when I give those tours, I always talk about 1921. Well, in 1921, Indianapolis was 100 years old. So we're now 2021, and Indianapolis last month turned 200 years old. So the parish is in step, also in sync with Indianapolis history. And the other thing is the 1920s was the period of the Ku Klux Klan. It had a lot of power at the state level, and then because we had a Klan governor, we had a Klan mayor, and we also had a Klan public school board. So I always see St. Joan of Arc was built as a sty in the eye of the Klan, because it doesn't look like any of the Protestant churches around here. It looks as though, and this is my take on it, as though a legion of angels had picked it up from the streets of Rome and brought it here to 42nd and Central, because it is it's a startling, really beautiful landmark, and it's also a product of its time, especially as a symbol of Catholic resilience and Catholic heritage in a time when we were under siege by the Klan. And then another person you need to talk to is Frank Snyder. And I can make contact for you. He left the parish 30 years ago. He lives in St. Louis, but he grew up at 49th in Pennsylvania, and he has very, very deep roots with St. Joan of Arc. So he'd be an excellent, and his memory is crystal clear. So Frank's in his 80s.
All right.
I just talked to him last week. Crystal clear. So he'd be a good, great person to talk to.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and, all the detail that you've been able to give. If you could just stay on the line, I'm going to close this one out.